podcasts like the one you're about to listen to are made possible in part by the support of the patrons of the Rob Has a Podcast community, whom I love even more than Kimmy loves the chickens. To find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron of Rob Has a Podcast, visit us on the website at robhasawebsite.com/patron. That's robhasawebsite.com/patron. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who doesn't want to have to do the damn dishes today, Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. Busy Thursday here on the podcast. We've got Kimmy Kappenberg joining us here on the recap, and very excited to talk with Kimmy about everything going on in episode number 5. Of the millennials versus the Gen Xers. I thought it was a very fun episode last night. I spoke with Steven on the Know-It-Alls earlier today. Again, I did everything today. And I had said I thought this was my favorite episode of the season because now the strategic wheels are in motion of these three tribes. And we've got a lot to talk about here. Had an exit interview with Cece earlier today, who seemed very nice and talked about her journey to getting onto Survivor and everything, of course, that happened in last night's Tribal Council. Both those shows are up. And then later today, we're going to get into our voicemail podcast with Ali Lasher joining me for that show. Looking forward to that. Make sure you don't miss any of the podcasts when you subscribe to Rob Has a Podcast. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. All right, everybody. I'm very excited to have this recap guest here with us on the line. This is somebody that I wanted to do one of these with for quite some time. And I thought it'd be fun to have somebody who was one of the original Survivor Gen Xers here with us to talk about Gen Xers versus millennials. Please welcome back the original savior of the chickens, Kimmy Kappenberg. Kimmy, how are you?
Hey, hello. I'm great. How are you doing?
Oh, very good, Kimmy. And thank you very much for joining us. I was speaking to your island spouse, Stephen Fishback, this morning.
Oh, I love him. I hope he's well.
Yes, he's doing very well. He's very excited about everything going on here. And I hope you are too, Kimmy.
Yes, yes. No, it's definitely good to see like all these different perspectives out there and relating to it, knowing the insides and the outsides and, you know, screaming at the TV and also knowing that, hey, what you're seeing on TV isn't everything you see.
Good, good. All right. So we could do a deep dive into that. How's everything been going for you since Survivor? I don't think we talked to you the night that it was the finale of Survivor Cambodia. And I don't think we heard from you since.
No, probably not. I've been, you know, just doing my life. Unfortunately, last spring I lost my brother. So I kind of went into a little bit of a hole.
Yeah.
So I just kind of, you know, It's very hard to do things emotionally, and it's the year of all the firsts, you know, first Mother's Day, first Father's Day.
Yeah, I had seen that on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry to hear that, Kimmy.
I know. It sucks. There's nothing you can do. It's just weird and it's awkward, and, you know, people think, oh, you should be over it by now. It's been, about 6.5, 7 months, and it's just, you know, different things. There's different triggers. So it definitely has changed my life, you know, in a way that I never knew. But I'm working at the same company I've been with at the same restaurant for 5 years and doing well. And it's me and my boys, and my boys are doing awesome. They're 8 and 10 already. My 10-year-old is already 5'2". He's a giant.
Oh my God.
Yeah. 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 His foot. I'm 5'10" and his foot is the same size as mine.
Yeah. Well, Kimmy, only a few more years till he's eligible for Survivor.
I know. And let me tell you, this kid, he's a tree climber and an explorer and completely fearless. He is. Yeah. So he's like all those wonderful things. And it's like, okay, he's going to have to go out there and protect mama.
So you would approve of that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, that's one of those things that I can't say, you know, do as I say, not as I do, because I did it twice.
Yeah.
We all have those moments, you know, don't do that. Mommy did that, but mommy's bad. Don't you do that.
Yeah. I guess if they want to do it, let them do it. I would just like, right. I want to make sure I don't want to push them into it. There's no pressure.
Oh, yeah. No, no pressure. That's definitely the theme of my house. Everything's washable and no pressure. That's pretty much you know, the way things are around here.
All right. That's a good philosophy.
Do it, do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Kimmy, what did you think of when you first heard this idea of the Gen X versus the Millennials season? Because when Survivors first started, there was this idea of like, oh, there's a lot of conflict between the older people and these younger Gen Xers and this lazy generation and how they don't want to do any work out there on the island.
Well, you know, first of all, I had to sit there and be like, okay, because I always forget these things. I'm like, what? I'm not a millennial. I guess I'm a Gen Xer. Like, I have to sit there, you know, and I'm not a stupid person, but it's like there's Generation Y, there's X. Clearly, I'm not a baby boomer, but who is in between the baby boomers and the Generation X? I don't even know. So, I sit there and it's like, we were all, you know, the younger generation at one point. So it doesn't really matter what label that you put on us. I'm going to be 44 now in like 3 weeks. And I look at it, when I first played, it was right before my 28th birthday. So I was 27. So it's like, I have the perspective of playing this game from both generations, mm-hmm. you know, from the millennial and the Gen X. So yes. It was kind of like,
you're both.
It's like kind of, yeah. So I'm like, okay, let me go and see, because in Australia, I was totally the millennial generation, but I had the Gen X, I guess, work ethic is what they're trying to separate it as. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess everybody just brings something different to it. I think that the younger generation is always going to be a dreamer generation. And yeah. then it's like all of a sudden you start paying taxes and having a job and, you know, losing half your paycheck. And it's like, oh, I'm suddenly grown up. So. You know, I think that I can definitely relate to both.
Okay, so you have both perspectives. Okay, so yes. You are uniquely positioned to talk about everything that's going on. So there is this tribe swap that happens, and of course, it's similar yes. to the swap that you went through in Cambodia. So I thought that you might have some perspective on that as well. So we ended up with this vote last night where we ended up seeing Cece being the person that got voted out. And I was wondering if when you were watching it, did this have any comparisons for you to the vote where you guys with Steven and Jeremy voted out Monica, who was somebody from your original tribe after a tribe swap?
Yeah, it was so funny because I was definitely thinking about that. I was like, the difference was that even voting out Monica, we were still going to have the majority of our Bayon tribe when we did the vote out. Mm-hmm. The vote out on this one, now it was going to shift to not having the advantage in numbers of your original tribe. Mm-hmm. So I was definitely seeing it because, you know, I really loved and adored Kelly Wigglesworth, and I just wasn't very trustworthy of Monica. So, you know, I wanted to do something more, you know, to solidify my position and to be around people that I actually liked. I mean, we were in Bayon Bliss. You know, honestly, we really all liked each other.
Yeah.
So when I was watching last night and the big redheaded ginger beard man,
yeah, you
know, Zeke was calling Chris that, you know.
The big ginger haired football player.
Yes, yes. I was sitting there and I'm laughing. But I'm looking at Chris and I'm like, you know, I totally get it that you want to go and be more comfortable in that little group, that temporary tribe, though. So, I mean, that's always going to convey a message to the other people that were on your original tribe. And for him, it's the whole generation. Now it's like they're going to look at him and be like, you know, if he was the one that was instigating and orchestrating that, and be like, well, is he going to be with the younger kids? Because I think Chris was originally concerned about his position that, you know what, these millennials are going to see him as intimidating and challenges and everything else. And they're going to be gunning for him. So him trying to go and already plant that seed of foundation to be with them in the future, is definitely something that it's a slippery slope going one side or the other.
Yeah, it's a weird season because you have the group of millennials and you feel like, okay, they're on different tribes, but they're still kind of one big group. And you feel like that maybe in a merge situation, they might have each other's backs more so than the Gen Xers. So I don't know if there's really any great upside for Chris to try to stick with this Gen X group, because what do they have? I don't think that they're super cohesive. Maybe it's almost similar to Takeo from Survivor Cambodia.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely my thing is, it's like when I'm looking at all these members on the tribes, okay, this Gen X tribes, it doesn't seem like you have a powerhouse that's really good at challenges, that's good at gathering food, that's good at, you know, doing fire and shelter. It doesn't seem like there's one of them that's, you know, like the golden boy compared to like Joe or something. You know what I mean? From my season in Cambodia.
I mean, who can be compared to Joe, Kimmy?
Probably nobody, except for a mini Joe.
Who's mini Joe?
But he's not. He doesn't exist yet. He hasn't been made.
Maybe that's going to be your son.
Well, he definitely could be. I mean, he loves Joe. I mean, crap. When Joe came to my house last year to watch a viewing at my house, you know, my son gets off the school bus and Mike and Joe are at my house, both of them from the Dirty 30.
Yes.
And my son comes running off the bus, both of them. And they're like, Joe, Mike. And they had never met him. And they're like running into their arms. And I'm like, hey, I'm here. But they're like, mommy, they're on TV. And I'm like, are you freaking serious right now?
Yeah.
I'm on TV. Yeah. I'm on TV on the same show. But yeah, so they definitely, my sons could definitely follow in Joe's footsteps. But I think on this actual season, you don't have those kind of people. And the funny thing is, though, the one person that I think is the most capable out of any of them is the model Ken from Gen Xer.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But you know, for the millennials, you need to have like four millennials almost to make one Gen Xer.
Wait, how do you mean in the vote?
No, I mean like in the capabilities. You know, like one guy can go fishing. One guy can. I mean, Michaela last night, she was having a complete meltdown. She's a little millennial that went and, you know, she was crying when she found out that she was on the Ikabula tribe. You know, she was just visibly
good for you,
miserable.
Kimmy, with remembering the tribe names.
Yeah, well, I have a cheat sheet.
So are you saying that you feel like that the millennials are much more specialized in their capabilities? And then when they're sort of out of their comfort zone, you feel like they're shutting down, where some of these Gen Xers like Ken are more multifaceted?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Exactly.
That's interesting.
If you could put words in my mouth, those would be the words.
Yeah. So I definitely see what you're saying with Ken, but do you feel like that there's other people? Because I don't know if necessarily we could paint the whole Gen X tribe with that brush. I mean, you've certainly seen Cece and David struggle in challenges. That's definitely, I wouldn't necessarily call them Renaissance people.
No, you definitely wouldn't.
David, amazing.
But you know what, though? You know what I absolutely love about David is that he is so far removed from his comfort zone.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Completely removed, and honestly, he is being a little sneaky and conniving and manipulative when he has to, and I don't think that he's ever done that. I think that he's doing these things and taking risks because he knows it's a game, and this is stuff that he wouldn't ordinarily do in his life. And I'm just, honestly, when he gave away that first idol, to what's her face, Jessica. A couple weeks last week.
Yes.
I was sitting there going, you know what? That could save face, that could help him, that could screw him up in the end. I said, but if he found the one idol, I said it wouldn't surprise me at all if he went off and found another one, because he has that determination and now he already has that motivation and confidence. Mm-hmm. So I was totally thinking that. And then when he found it, I was like, see, I think he's getting the momentum. Now, his accuracy and challenges, I think, you know, is much to be desired. But when it comes to some of the, you know, more mental ones, or maybe endurance, you know, endurance as far as balance or something. Now, who am I kidding? That kid can't balance on anything.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but with the puzzles also, that he's been put in a position to shine in these puzzles, yeah, and he's come up short in those too.
Yeah, but I think because there's also somebody else that's in the puzzles, and you know, you have two different. And I think wasn't their team, their tribe, the ones where they took the bigger puzzle versus the smaller, yes, puzzle?
Yes.
So I think that it had to do a little bit with that as well, because, you know, I think collectively, obvious as a whole, the younger generation, the millennials, definitely were a little bit more nimble and agile getting through these games.
Well, they beat them in the word puzzle last week too.
Oh yeah, they did. Dang it. Well, there goes my theory, but I'm still proud of David. I mean, I'm super proud of him. Cece, honestly, you know, I never want to get excited when somebody gets voted out of Survivor. You know what I mean? Because everybody goes out there with the dream and the hope of being like, you know what? I want to make my kids proud or my family proud or do something that's, you know, awesome, that's bigger than me. And, you know, it's so hard. But when people lose, it's like, yeah, Pumpkin. You know, Stevie Wonder can see that coming. Yes, Pumpkin, yes. I mean, it's your time. Your time is up. You really didn't have anything else to offer.
Yeah.
But then you still, you know, but it's like still somebody's dream getting crushed, you know. But so I don't want to celebrate somebody getting voted off. I haven't really disliked somebody or not connected with somebody so much so that I was doing the happy dance when they went.
but didn't connect with Cece.
No, I mean, well, actually, I did kind of connect with her because I'm like, okay, she's an older woman. And, you know, so on that thing, and you feel like a little bit on the outsider. But when she went, it was like, okay, you can't even swim. I mean, at least, you know, me, I'm like, I can swim. Mm-hmm. I got the swimming part down. Like, I can bring certain things. I just kind of felt like, meh, she just brought a number.
Yeah.
You know, and so it wasn't a surprise to see her go. And I think because she doesn't have, you know, all that much to bring to the challenges and stuff, except for, okay, you're going to be the last one. And, you know, I think that she was just going to ride coattails for numbers. And I think that's what they did.
You know, I was talking about this with Steven this morning in terms of when you do this switch, instead of like a switch with the two tribes, to do a switch to three different tribes, I do think it puts more of an emphasis on keeping around people that are more physical players. And I think it does sort of weed out some of the weaker challenge performers when you do that. I'm just trying to think if this holds true, because we've only seen this happen one time before in your season in Cambodia, where we went from two tribes to three tribes, and now these three tribes. So first Varner went out, and he was definitely somebody who was hurting them in the competitions. I think he had also gotten hurt. He couldn't even walk. So yeah, that was a consideration, so, right?
Uh-huh.
And then after that, then it was, so it was PG, and then it was Varner. And I think that both of them were people that were not really helping to win competitions. And then, right, and then Monica was part of it. Monica in the competitions, was that a part of the thinking?
Oh yeah. I mean, well, Monica's little, I mean, I'm a much, much bigger person than Monica. Mm-hmm. And you know, when we were doing the challenge where we had to roll somebody in a barrel, and it was, I think it was me and Fishback and Jeremy, when we were rolling the barrel down and Monica was in it, and then she had to go climb up on top of the barrel and undo a string to go get the balls for us to go and play like the ski ball at the end. Monica was just, she's the littlest person, put her in the barrel, and she just couldn't get her bearings in that. I mean, granted, she was dizzy, but Kelly Wentworth was completely kicking her tail on that, and so was Wu. So when you're seeing that, and the challenges, even ones that you thought that she would, you know, do better in, it wasn't working out. And then at camp, it's not like she was very helpful. I mean, she'd sit in the water and just sunbathe herself. And then I think she would wash dishes once in a while.
Wow. Hey, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, she did something. And you know what? She actually was learning or watching and learning how to scale a fish.
What do you mean, like on YouTube before she went?
No, with Keith Nail, you know, stick to the plan, Keith. Yeah.
So Keith Nail was teaching her how to scale a fish.
Yeah. So, like, you know, when you were at the tribe, at camp, she didn't have a lot to do, and, you know, she'd be more gossipy and I think it was too early on in the game, because that's the thing. When you want to start, you know, planning things or backstabbing that early on, I think that you're going to make everybody not trust you. And I think there was that issue and the fact that she wasn't as strong in challenges.
Yeah.
So that definitely was a reason why, you know, for her to go. And for us, like I said, because even with her vote out when we were on, you know, that buy-on when there was three tribes, we still had the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we only had five on our tribe, it may have been a different story. I mean,
yeah,
you know, we might not have even have sat Jeremy out in that challenge. But we were just like, hey, even if we lose and we go to tribal council, we'll still be fine.
You know, also, then when you guys went back to two tribes, then it did swing back where Wu was the person who got voted out. And, you know, you were looking to take out a number from, you know, the potential Andrews. And I say you, I mean, the people that were on to KO at that time, they were looking to try to take out a number from the potential friends of Andrew Savage, who was a TKO person. But Wu is somebody who definitely could have won individual immunity.
Oh, yeah, definitely was. I mean, it's so weird how this game changes all the time. Because, honestly, I would have been happy voting out Spencer when it was the three of us, you know, when it was the three tribes. But we're like, okay, we're going to give that gift over to Cass, because Cass isn't a huge Wu fan, but yet they kept him, and he was so strong when it came up. So it's just, it's so unpredictable out there as to what creates a vote.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk about a couple of these other tribes and people that we haven't gotten a chance to talk about. So you mentioned Ken. He's with Jessica. Kimmy, how surprising was it for you when Jessica told Ken that she would give him her legacy advantage?
Well, I think that she was at a desperate situation. I definitely think that she felt like she had to show some kind of thankfulness, because, you know, it was mentioned that it's not like everybody was looking forward to her coming back to camp because she wasn't clicking with everybody. But her and Ken, I think they did originally have a connection, because they were kind of, you know, the kids that were on the sidelines, because everybody else had the numbers with the Paul group and whatnot, and Paul's little buddies. I can't remember that one guy's name.
Chris and Brett.
Brett.
Yes.
Brett. Yeah. So I think, you know, she had to go and be like, hey, Jessica had to tell Ken, hey, this is what I have. This is what we can do. So that way, he goes, I trust her again. I mean, it's so hard to build trust out there. So by her sharing that little thing with him, I mean, nobody even knew. It's the first time there's ever been a legacy advantage.
Yeah.
So for her to go and say that, okay, that's great. So now Ken's feeling like, okay, I have a really good relationship with David. Obviously, Jessica feels some loyalty towards David as well. And honestly, if Ken needs to go and manipulate Jessica later on, I mean, he could totally blindside her later on. Vote her, get her voted out, tell her some hogwash kind of story, and get her legacy advantage. And if you really wanted to go balls out, that would be a way to do it.
Kimmy, does it make you mad that all of a sudden this is the season that they invent some sort of advantage to give to people on day 36?
No, why would I be hostile about that? Son of a...
I just said that that would have come in handy, right?
You think?
Then you
think?
You wouldn't have to take it to the house.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Exactly. These fucking 36 days. Yeah, I mean, they're playing a game that, you know, I would have benefited from tremendously.
So on that tribe, you have now Ken and Jessica, who seem like a pair. And then you have Adam from the millennial tribe, who has the hidden immunity idol. And then you have this other pair of Figgy and Taylor. Kimmy, I know you're a romantic. You must be so excited to see Figgy and Taylor on Survivor.
You know, I think young love is fabulous. I think any kind of love is fabulous. Totally do.
Any kind.
And it, well, yeah, just love who you love. If you can find somebody to love you and like you, I mean, go with it. I think that's fabulous. But the, you know, these two, it's just, it's so funny because watching it as an outsider, and I think that it's so awesome that their first, you know, beginning of their relationship. I mean, I don't know if they're together now. I don't know if they'll be together in 2 years from now. They could have broke up 2 weeks ago. But to be able to have like that little camera taking, you know, capturing those first moments of a new relationship, I think that's freaking awesome.
Okay.
I think that's really sweet.
So you, yeah, you're pro this. I thought you were going to poo-poo the Figgy and Taylor.
You know what? This is the problem. They get together, okay? And, you know, people say, oh, powerhouse couples, they don't make it, anything's... It doesn't matter whether it's a romantic couple or just, you know, two guys that are friends on Survivor or two girls or, you know, guy and girl. If you're a powerhouse, you're a powerhouse. I mean, in my season, you had Jeremy and his puppet Tasha and Spencer.
Not a puppet.
That were, yeah, they were totally his puppets.
Okay.
You know, so... They were voting together. I mean, you could say the same thing for them. And it's like when we were trying to sit there and try to figure that out. I mean, young love and stuff. You know, Figgy and Taylor. I think that they'll definitely. They don't see themselves, or I guess Figgy sees them as being a threat. But you know, Taylor. I mean, I don't know how that kid can find himself out of a paper bag with a book of matches and a pair of scissors, because he's honestly, he's in La La Land. I mean, I would, like, he looks like a stoner kid and I don't know him, but he's just like the whole, hey, man, like all totally relaxed.
Yeah, he's relaxed. You know, drunk on Figgy.
Apparently so. Apparently she's some fine grade A weed to him and to his heart. I don't know. I'm not a pothead. I don't know the terminology, but I guess that's me and my Gen X, you know, ignorance.
Yes. But, you're painting it with a broad brush.
Yes. But I mean, honestly, if they want to go and sit and start schmecking down on each other without any toothpaste.
Schmecking down.
You know, you want to kiss on each other, loving each other. I really don't care. Yeah, maybe I guess if I was out there, it would be different. You'd be like, hey, you got to go and separate them. But wouldn't you like to be the third person in their voting alliance, though?
Well, you that know? Brings up an interesting question for Adam, because really he, I think, is going to be in the power position, because he could stick with the two millennials in Figgy and Taylor next week, or... if they go to tribal council, or they could go ahead and go with the Gen Xers. He could be the Chris who ends up flipping over, and he was not in a great position going back to the last time they went to tribal council. So what do you think of this, Kimmy?
I think anything is possible. I think that...
What should he do?
What's his face do with Chris and
what should Adam do in terms of going with either the showmance that he was with or flipping over and being the new Chris?
With Ken and Jessica.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that he would get more loyalty out of Taylor and Figgy. I mean, I know that Figgy's very smart, but Taylor seems to just be kind of going with the flow. So I think that he'd have more of a way to, manipulate them than Jessica and Ken. And I think Jessica and Ken is very smart. And the one thing that I think about Ken, I mean, Ken looks like he would be very successful on the outside as far as easy to get along with. You know, he is a Renaissance man. He's an attractive man. He seems, you know, very articulate. He can carry a conversation. He's not a dingbat or a bimbo. And then it would seem almost like, while he's out here on Survivor, he was one of the low men on the totem pole in their tribe. And I think that that's not something that he's ever really been, and I could be totally wrong, But I don't think he's as familiar with that, you know, being the last kid kind of picked for the team, kind of, you know what I mean, mentality or situation. And I feel like he's getting more of that on Survivor, kind of more the way David, you know, and he knows, okay, you know, I'm always the last one picked for the team in the real world and then in Survivor world as well. Whereas I think it's a different thing for Ken.
Kimmy, am I detecting that you might have a little bit of a Survivor crush on Ken?
No, Ken Doll? Ken's too pretty for me.
You don't want to be schmecking down?
Oh my God. I don't know if I could kiss him. He's way too pretty for me.
too pretty.
He's like a Survivor crush. You know how like how you have man crush Monday or woman Wednesday. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't need to do anything with him. No, but he's like a cool cat, you know? definitely. I don't think there's ever been. Oh, no, there's one Survivor that I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'd do that. But yeah.
Whoa. No. You can't just put that out there, Kimmy.
I would never, but it's just one of those things where it's like,
is it a recent Survivor or is it a veteran?
It's more recent.
And not from Cambodia?
No.
Is it from last season?
I don't know what seasons people are on. I really don't have a whole tablet. Probably not. No, but there's someone that I saw once when I was watching and I was like, oh, okay. Please. You know, where I was like, huh. Well, wouldn't that have been interesting?
All right. Can you give us another hint?
Nope.
Is it from the last 5 years?
Yes.
Last 5 years, but not in Cambodia and probably not last season.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So what were we talking about? We were talking about the Ken doll.
Sorry, I don't mean to get you distracted.
Well, but it's just, you know, we all have particular tastes. But anyway, so Ken and David, I think that for the first time, it's like, I don't want to say this offensively, but I'm just going to, like, David is in like the little awkward social circle. And I think that that has been his whole life. And I don't think that for Ken. So it's almost like David's been able to like, take Ken under his wing and be like, come on, I'm the king of the social awkward circle.
Yeah.
Come with me and we will be friends. And I think that, you know, Ken can appreciate that. And that's why they have like this connection. And that's the greatest thing about Survivor is that you meet people that you never would come across.
Okay, so this is like the plot of like some movie, Kimmy, David is like the nerd in high school and Ken is like one of the popular kids, but then he gets like chastised and like ostracized from the popular kids. And so then he has to go befriend the nerds and then David is teaching him how to get by as being sort of an outcast I don't know if it's like She's All That. I don't know which one of these movies this is, but it's definitely a movie.
Totally like a John Hughes film. Yeah. Kind of thing. That's what it is. You know, it's like the Breakfast Club of sorts, you know?
Yes.
But that's definitely something that Survivor really, that's why people still watch it, because there's always somebody on TV that you can relate to that represents you, whether it be, you know, your demographic, your education, your, you know, like Zeke and Chris connected on where they came from.
Yeah.
You know, there's always going to be somebody that represents you in some weird way. And you make these connect, you know, when you're playing the game. You know, these are people that aren't ordinarily in your everyday life.
Yeah. Well, you know? we'll call that movie All the Right Moves, by the way.
Okay.
That's what it's called.
You have research. That's good.
So there's one other tribe, Kimmy, that we haven't touched on. The Ikabula tribe that you already memorized the name of.
Because it's such a pretty green tribe and I'm a girl.
Did you write that down or you just memorized it?
No, I wrote it down. I cheated.
That's fine. Look, I wouldn't remember if I didn't write it down.
Yeah, no, but it was the pretty green tribe. It's probably the one tribe that I would have wanted to be on.
Because you like the buff.
It was such a pretty green. Yeah, I love buff. You know, and I'm really not a fashion savvy kind of gal. I mean, you guys have seen me out there, but I really like that shade of green.
Okay. So Ikabula, you got four of the millennials. You got Jay, Hannah, Will, and Michaela. And then you also have Sunday and Brett. Do you think that Sunday and Brett are screwed here, Kimmy?
I think that they have a chance in this tribe only because Brett is another one of those bigger guys. And Sunday, I mean, I think Sunday and Brett, because even though they are the minority, but there are four of the millennials that are on there. If there's one cranky millennial, you know, it just takes one day where somebody pisses everybody off. Like in our situation in Cambodia, they can still vote out a millennial and still have the numbers. So, you know, that was kind of like my situation in Cambodia. There were four of us from the original buy-on. So us getting rid of one of our own, Monica, we still had the numbers. So it didn't matter.
Yeah.
So they might still be okay because in the challenges and stuff, you know, well, Sunday completely, but you know, dropped the ball in this one.
Well, David is dropping the ball literally.
Yeah, literally. Oh God, David, poor little train wreck, that kid. But Michaela was a rock star this whole episode.
She really was. You know, let me ask you about this six person tribe because I have an email question that came in to us from Thomas Forsey and wants to ask not about that first six-person vote that you went to in Cambodia, but the final six-person vote that you went to. Thomas wants to know, if this six-person green tribe goes to tribal council and the millennials decide to split their votes to flush out an idol, do you think that any of the four millennials, Will, Hannah, Jerry, Michaela, could flip their vote for a 3-2-1 result, much like what you were trying to do at the final six of Second Chances?
Yes. I think it's definitely possible. Again, I mean, because you never know who has the idol. I mean, at this point in time, you know, when you're down to the six, you could have four or five idols floating around. Mm-hmm. If you have, you know what I mean? So everybody's got to be protecting themselves. Otherwise, you know, the last man out there without a, you know, without an idol. I mean, what happened in our final tribal council was, oh, well, if you're playing an idol, well, then I'm going to play my idol. Mm-hmm. You know, Jeremy played his idol. And well, Wentworth's like, well, I'm playing my idol. You know, and if I had an idol at that point, I would have been like, well, hell, numbers are stacked against me. Well, I'm going to play my idol.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes very contagious. So, yeah, I mean, definitely you have to think of if there's, you know, if there's an immunity idol. And it's just, that's the one thing that I keep kicking myself in the ass for over and over again, is that when Jeremy played his idol for Fishback, my island husband Fishback, whom I adore so much, if Jeremy played his idol for Fishback, I should have realized Jeremy had another idol.
Why?
Because there is no way in hell that Jeremy, who is one of the most amazing, loving family men out there, there is no way in hell that his alliance and loyalty to Fishback,
I get it. I get what you're saying.
He didn't need Fishback that bad.
Yeah.
He didn't need that. He didn't need Fishback that badly. And I should have realized that he would have went and, you know, he could have played that idol for him. You know, if he knew Fishback was going that game or that round, the next round, Jeremy could have played, you know, one idol for him and then the next idol for himself again and hopefully try to win an individual immunity. But there is no way in hell that he would go and sacrifice his only idol for Fishback when he is trying to stay out there as long as he can to make a better life for his family.
When did you first think of that?
When I was at tribal council and the whole voting thing was going on, like the revotes and stuff, I'm like, of course he had the second idol. Like right then it was just kind of like.
So right after he played it, it was like the light bulb went off. Like he wouldn't have saved Steven unless he had another one in his back pocket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I've never heard anybody say that before.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's when you really sit there and think about the perspective, because you as a viewer, when you're watching it, you know he's got these idols. So it's like, oh, yeah, well, he can go and give that one away and help somebody else out that's going to further his alliance. Now, me, when I'm sitting there, well, I don't, you know, you don't know when somebody has an idol. So you don't know when they're going to play it. But it just clicked like, okay, all right, that makes total sense. Because like even when Jeremy went and played his idol for Fishback, it was like, I was like, why is he getting up there to go and use his idol? And then when he said it was for Fishy, I'm going, what? Are you, you know, it just wasn't making sense that he thought that Fish needed to be, I thought that he was, that Jeremy was trying to use the idol for himself. And I'm like, your name isn't anywhere near this. I'm like, you're totally fine. And then when he said it was for Fishback, I was like, oh, okay. You know, like things, it just changes when you're out there.
Refresh my memory. Were you in on that plan? Did they tell you, or you were blindsided that they were going to vote off Steven at that vote?
Oh, I was completely blindsided. They were voting off Fishy.
Yeah. Cause you would have told them.
Oh, hell yeah, I would have told him. Yes, because this is something that you don't see out there. But Fish and I were very close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we would sit there because I speak neurotic Jew, okay? and I love my Fishy. And it's like everybody else would be like, you know, because Steve has his little quirks and stuff. I'm like, I have dated 10 of him in New York.
10 Stevens?
Okay? I'm from well, yeah, you know. I actually dated a guy named Steven who was a neurotic Jew, you know, but it's just like these little, you know, nuances and stuff. And it's like, I get it. I totally get it. I'm from Long Island and I totally understand, you know, and whereas people would think that Fishy was being, you know, shady or something, he was just being cautious or, you know, very analytical.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people were in the tribe would be like, okay, well then he, you know, that's what made even Jeremy in the beginning was like, man, Fish is just too nervous and stuff. I'm like, no, that's just, it's not going to be an impulse thing. It's just the way he is. I mean, I kept trying to get I had the best idea of me and Wigglesworth and Joey Amazing and Fishback. And I told them that I kept telling Steven and Joe, you two just got to play along for a little bit because they had such a rivalry that nobody would have suspected them coming together and voting together to vote out Jeremy and Spencer and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And those two just couldn't play in the same sandbox for 5 freaking minutes, you know, because they didn't trust each other because they had such trust issues with each other.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm like, you guys just got to.
You couldn't bridge the gap.
No. And Wiggles and I were trying. We were trying. And they were like, OK. And then it would be like, nope. It was just like, it's just that when you're out there, it messes with your mind so much.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's too many variables and what ifs. And when we had a merge of freaking 13 people, it just, you know, took you to somewhere else. But anyway, back to this tribe of Ikabula. Okay. I honestly thought that when they had merged, when they drew buffs, I thought that Michaela's attitude was going to get her voted off. Mm-hmm. They didn't win immunity.
Yeah. She was mad. She didn't want to go to the other, not so much with the tribe poll, but she didn't want to be on the tribe where she had to start over. She said to Jeff, you did this wrong.
Yeah. and Jeff thrives on that. That's like the best.
But he was like, I'll own that. I'll own that. I feel like that if a guy said that to Jeff, I think he would have really shut it down.
Probably. Definitely. But yeah, I was very impressed that she just kept going and kept going.
Yeah. Look, yes, she was bummed out, but then she came back and made the fire and, you know, it was a turnaround story for her. And then she was like the MVP in the challenge for them.
Yes.
I wanted to get your take on how they did this season, because a lot was made during Cambodia over how this was really unfair that Angkor had to go and start over. They had, you know, the worst beach and they had people that they could never get their, you know, feet off the ground again because it was just such a disaster over at Angkor. This time they give them an extra person. Do you like that they did that, Kimmy?
Yeah, I mean, I would think that for morale reasons. I mean, obviously, one of the tribes was going to get an extra person.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you may as well go and give it to the, you know, the tribe that's going to have to start off from square one. So that, yeah, the workload is a little bit more shifted. The workload shared more amongst the other people. But I don't think at that point that the weather was as bad. I mean, it obviously, you know, I don't remember who said it, but they said, oh, I had the best sleep of my life. You know, the best sleep since I've been here was when they were sitting there on that little beach. Wasn't it? I think, was that them?
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like, okay, so obviously there's, you know, they're sleeping and they didn't need to be protected from the elements as much. Whereas when we were in Cambodia, you know, we had the rainy season and from the monsoons and stuff. And it was just, you know, they only had Well, how many people are on their tribe at that point? Five people?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just definitely think that the elements at this point in this season were different than the ones that we had in Cambodia.
Yeah.
So it may have been like a little bit of a messing with their minds. And Michaela could have been like, okay, I'm going to be the anchor, you know, the anchor tribe of this. And it wasn't quite that bad.
Now, do you like how they did it this season where they ended up giving an extra person to that third tribe that has to start over? Or do you prefer like what they did last season where they sent Julia to Exile Island and made all the tribes even?
I think it was more, you know, doing it this way, it's definitely by having the extra person instead of using an Exile Island on that third tribe. I think that it brings like a little bit of calmness, and it also, it's not as predictable. It's not being like, oh, okay, well, we know what's going to happen. The person that goes to Exile Island, you know, is going to come back and they're going to feel like the, you know, the low man on the totem pole because they're replacing somebody. And I think that this is definitely gives them a little bit more of an opportunity to strategize also.
Yeah.
Because when Julia came back in, it's like she had to do a lot of butt kissing almost to find her footing within the tribe. Because everybody else now, it's like, okay, well, we've been here. We did this together. So you know, we've already solidified ourselves. You're an outsider, and it's always easy to pick off the outsider.
Kimmy, do you have a winner pick in this season?
I don't really have one right now, but it wouldn't surprise me if Ken and David went far.
Ken and David go to the end. Mm-hmm. And then who do you pick? Ken?
No, I think, man, if David could go to the end, I think people would respect him so much. You know what I mean? Because obviously he was doing a lot of outwitting and outlasting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would definitely be, you know, something on him. The Gen X is right now, the millennials right now, I'm not really sure because, you know, they change their mind like a leaf in the wind. You know what I mean? It's definitely, I think that you're going to start seeing a little bit more jealousy and stuff coming out.
Yes.
As it goes by. That's what I just feel like. I feel like it's been very easy for them because it looks like they're all eating, you know, a lot for survivor conditions. You know what I mean? They're like, oh yeah, we have this taro root and we have this fish and we have this. And, you know, they're making these little stews and stuff. And it's like, okay, those little skinny asses from millennials, give them a couple of weeks out there. And then all of a sudden, you know, bad weather, something happened to their food supply, going without fire for a few days, they're going to start getting tired and cranky and hungry. And that's when, you know, that's when all of a sudden things, the tides are going to change.
All right, Kimmy, let me ask you some of these questions I have for you from the listeners. Our own Jordan Kalish wants to know, with Ken's fishing prowess, speaking of eating, are you concerned that there won't be any fish left in the ocean by the time the season ends? That's a logical thing to be concerned about, right?
No, that's what Monica thinks. No, I think there's going to be plenty of prolific fish out in the ocean to go ahead and keep them sustained. I don't think that any of the fish out there are going to go on the endangered species or extinction list because of Ken's superpowers at fishing and getting octopus.
Yes.
I think they'll be just okay. The ecosystem will stay intact.
No pumpkin, no.
Yes, that's very good. We love the no pumpkin no, and it's really the perfect time of year, no. Kimmy, for our no pumpkin no.
Yes, it is. It is no pumpkin no.
No I pumpkin spice no too.
That's funny.
Okay. Josh Spalding wants to know, I enjoyed your run on Cambodia. Looking back on your survivor experiences, do you think it was easier to play as a millennial or as a Gen Xer? What are the advantages or disadvantages for each age group?
Definitely when you're playing as a millennial or as I played as a millennial, when I was out there for the adventure. So it wasn't as heartbreaking and disappointing when I got voted out because I was out there for the experience. And the first time I was only there for 15 days, but it was an amazing 15 days. And I was like, okay, awesome. Well, once I'm playing as a millennial, I mean, I'm playing the game and I'm trying to do things strategically and doing everything. And it hurt more getting voted out at 36 days.
As a Gen Xer.
Yes.
Yes.
Because, yeah, definitely. Because I'm sitting there and it's like, I don't know, I felt like I had more on my plate to prove, and to the kids and to myself and the second chance and the fans. It was definitely a harder pill to swallow.
Yeah.
You know, older, because the older you get, you know, you want to be more successful.
I get that. I mean, I think that you can come into the game as a younger person. And when I played, you know, I was 24 years old, and it's like, okay, well, this is just a fun thing that I'm doing. And if it works out, it works out. But there's not that kind of pressure that's on you, where, like you were talking about with Jeremy before, or for yourself, where it's like, hey, people are counting on me to come home and do well in this game. Like, I didn't just go on like sabbatical to go, like, I'm backpacking through Europe. No, I'm going on Survivor for 6 weeks. Like, you're taking time away from when you're supposed to be working and providing for a family to go out and hopefully come home with a prize.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I was 27 turning 28 when I was out in Australia. Hey, I didn't have anybody, you know, checking in on me or that I was accountable for, or, you know, I didn't have people relying on me and you know, needing their boo-boos kissed. And then when I went away, you know, I come back, my son lost a tooth. And it's like, well, damn it, if I'm going to miss those milestones, if I'm going to be there, because it's not just, you know, me going out there and having fun. It's like, if I'm going to be selfish and take this time away from my family, then damn it, it's going to be worth my sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids and family sacrifice too. You know, it's just a totally different dynamic when you're out there, you know, depending on where you are with your family.
Did your kids really get a kick out of it, seeing you on the show?
Yes. Yes, they did. And it was funny though, because we would always watch Survivor at night. But when it was my season, I had friends that were coming over for Survivor viewing parties, and the kids would be there, but then they'd go away and they would have to watch it separately because they wanted to see what was going on. And my younger son's very sensitive, and he'd be like, oh, mommy, okay, you did a good job, Ken. And he'd come over. He'd be like, okay, mommy, you look sad there. Don't be sad. I think because, you know, one time I was talking about my older son, Carter, and mm-hmm. I was crying. He's like, mommy, Carter's here. Carter's doing okay. He's like, you don't have to cry. And so I think that they like that personal time watching it. Mm-hmm. But they would get a kick out of it. Like when I would go up to school or something and go have lunch with them, they'd be like, Carter's mommy, we saw you on Survivor, you know. We watched you on TV. So it was, you know, I thought that they'd be embarrassed because mommy was running around in their underwear. They didn't even notice.
No, it's bathing suit.
So I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got one that looked as much as like a bathing suit as it could possibly be.
Have you showed them the old season too?
Yes. And actually right before I got called back for Cambodia was the first time that we watched it. They had seen pictures. You know, they knew that mommy ate a worm, but right before I went to Cambodia, they were 6 and 8, I guess, before their summer birthdays. And so it was like, okay, they're old enough to see mommy do this and understand that mom, you know, and we had just like watched it the week before I got the phone call to ask if I was interested in Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, you know, they're like, mommy, you ate a worm.
Yeah.
Mommy, stop, you know, don't eat a worm.
How did you tell them that you were going to be going back?
You know, I just sat there and I said, okay, well, mommy has a chance and do Survivor again. And then you'd be able to watch it on Wednesday nights with me when I get back. They were okay with it, but then it was like, okay, well, how long are you going to be gone? And explaining to a 6-year-old the time continuum, like they don't, you know, they can't really understand a week, 2 weeks, 6 weeks. That just sounds like forever.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to bring out a calendar and be like, okay, well, this is what we'll do. You'll have school for this week, and then you'll go to Florida for this week. And, you know, they were excited, but they were, you know, a little bit concerned about the length of time. But they ended up having a ball. And, you know, they missed the last week of school. I had signed them out of school a week early. So they were able to fly to Florida with my parents and go to summer camp and go fishing. So
yeah,
they had all the old people in Florida adopt them. I think they had, I don't know, like 6 sets of grandparents that summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they were very much occupied.
Yeah.
But I just had to tell them, look, mommy has a chance to do this, and then you'll be able to watch me on TV, and, you know, and I'll be sitting with you, and how cool would that be? And so, you know, it was a very basic way of saying it. And then the messed up thing is when I said goodbye to them, it's like, am I going to see them in 3 days or am I going to see them in 2 months?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that was the hard thing.
So this is a question from Amy Shapiro, which is building on a little bit of what we've been talking about. Kimmy, you played Survivor in your late 20s with people older than you and in your early 40s with people younger than you. Given the theme of the season is generational, what are the millennials missing, if anything, from their gameplay? What are they going to be facing now that it's not just them competing with each other? Do you have any advice for the millennials on how to deal with people that are older?
I think the millennials need to really be a little bit more self-reliant, because I think that the millennials are almost like the product of like the first products of the helicopter mom generation right now. I mean, I don't know if they could all stand on their own 2 feet, some of them. I mean, that's what I was saying. Like, it takes, you know, almost like 3 or 4 millennials to make up one Generation X.
Mm-hmm.
They just definitely, I mean, Michaela totally surprised me, because she, you know, she didn't give up, and she got that fire when she was like the most frustrated. But I also don't know if maybe, because when I saw her attitude, you know, when she was told that, I honestly would have, you know, that she was going to be on that tribe, I honestly thought she'd be the first one voted off. So I don't know if maybe some of her drive was, I have to do this so I don't get voted off with the fire challenge. But I was one of the oldest, I mean, Cass and I were the oldest females out there. Cass is 3 days older than me when we were out in Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to, it's a very hard road to navigate, because you don't want to be the know-it-all older woman who has the life experience. And I think as the younger one, you don't want to be seen as the cocky, obnoxious kid. So you just have to listen to people. You know, I always say to people, I said, when I went out there and I played in Australia, I was 27 and I knew it all. And when I played last year in Cambodia at 42, I didn't know a damn thing. you know what I mean? Because the older you get, you realize how much you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really do have the two perspectives. I think that you have to, when you're younger, listen a little bit more and take the advice of the people who have the life experience. And in this case, that would be the Gen Xers. You really have to go and understand that you can learn something from them. Just like, you know, the Gen Xers could learn something from a millennial. I think both sides have to be open to say,
what can they learn?
Well, that there's definitely more than one way to get a job done. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think, and I especially
80
think
different ways.
That, yeah. And there, it's like me when I clean my house, I make my mother crazy, because I'll go in every room and I'll do one thing here, one thing there, one thing there. And she's like, oh my God, you've started 10 different things. It's like, leave me alone. Like, my mother will go and she'll clean the bathroom and the kitchen and the bedroom and this, that, and the other thing. But at the end of the day, if you just come into the final product, you know, the whole house is clean. Mm-hmm. But if she saw the way I did it, it makes her bananas. So I definitely think that as a millennial, take advice and understand that people are telling you from life experiences, hey, you know what, this might be a little bit easier, but, you know, all kids are going to be defiant and they want to learn on their own, you know, and I know as I've gotten older, it's like, man, if I had just listened, it would have saved me this much heartache or this much energy or this much money if I had listened more to other people's experiences in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what, you know, the millennials have to do. And then the Generation X, I mean, you know, they also have to not be so set in their ways, you know, and you have to sometimes look and be like, oh, okay, I didn't look at it from that perspective, because everybody's got a different angle from their own life experiences that they're bringing in and why they do things the way they do.
All right, Kimmy, this is a question from Derek, who says, Kimmy first played in her 20s, then came back as a mom, becoming the most improved player in Second Chances. Do you see any of these millennials having that potential? Who's going to come back like 13 years later?
Oh, wow. That's a really cool question. Well, you know what? Maybe we'll see Taylor and Figgy come back. That would be like, they could come back as like blood versus water. How about that? And they'll be married with kids, you know?
Yeah. Old married couple, Figgy and Taylor.
Yeah, exactly.
He won't be laughing all the time then.
No, they'll be telling fart jokes and stuff, you know? They'll be like an old happy people.
Kimmy, why is this guy Taylor? Why is he laughing all the time?
You told me that it's because he's drunk on and high on Figgy.
Is that why?
I don't know. I just think that, you know, it'd be interesting to see, you know, this time. I think Zeke also, because Zeke is he's very clever with his wording and stuff, and when he tells a story, and, you know, he's very smart, and he's another one that's been coming out of his shell. And I think that, because, you know, he's one of the older, he's on the older end of the millennials. Mm-hmm. So I think seeing Zeke in 13 or 15 years would definitely be a totally different person.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that, and I hate to say it, but I think that so many of these millennials that are on the tribe, they're like cookie cutters. You know what I mean? They're the same body. They're the same, you know, happy-go-lucky. And that's awesome. That's great. But they all blend together for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I haven't seen enough, because it's, you know, it's always hard in the first few weeks, because there's so many of them that, you know, people that are playing, that you don't really get to see personalities of individuals. It's like, oh yeah, there's another little skinny girl. Look at how cute she is. You know, there's another little surfer dude guy, you know, so they kind of blend together for me, except for the ones when they do some, you know, something that's out of the box a little bit more.
Yeah. And Kimmy, how about Will? He could come back in 13 years and still qualify for the millennial tribe. He'd be 31.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Wow. Okay, didn't think of it like that. Yeah, he's really young. Well, that'd be interesting too, because he's just, I mean, he's a baby. And then by then he'd be like, you know, a young man, you know, still like a young man. And
yeah.
Still at 31, not expected to have your life together.
Yeah. Ben Dubs wants to know, which celebrity couple is your favorite? Do you like Figgler, Figtails, or Failer?
I think I like Figtails.
Figtails. Okay.
I think that's cute.
All right.
I like that.
This is a serious question for you, Kimmy. Now, okay. David Baltazar wants to know, where was your Sia check?
My who to what?
Kimmy, last season, there was a man named Ty Trang, and he had a best friend named Mark the Chicken. And he kept,
yes,
Mark the Chicken around.
Oh, Sia.
The entire
there, my
time.
Sia.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Chicken.
Yes. And he was best friends with Mark the Chicken. And then when they got to the finale, the musical recording superstar Sia, yes, came up on the stage and said, "Ty, you did such a good job. You kept the chicken safe. Here's $50,000 mm-hmm. for you, Ty."
Yeah, I would like to know where my Sia check is. Yeah, absolutely. Instead, I remember I was on one of the morning shows, and what they do, they gave me three live chickens. I'm like, I live in an apartment on Long Island. So you know what we spent that whole day doing?
What?
Finding somebody that would go and take the chickens and not eat them. I was like, wow, that's great. Thank you. Fantastic. You know, and it was funny. It was very funny. And it was like, okay, great. Well, at least these chickens aren't going to slaughter. But it was kind of like, this is costing me money to give me these chickens.
Yeah.
And Ty goes and gets this beautiful blessing of a gift. And
Kimmy,
I'm like, huh.
You let go of your principles. You let Juicy J die on your watch.
Listen, the whole Juicy thing, I was trying not, no, I would give Juicy food and everything. That poor chicken out there, it was just terrible. I mean, when we got out there in the ocean, she would have been better off being shark bait than what that poor chicken went through.
But maybe if you would have taken Juicy J with you the whole ride, maybe Sia would have come to your finale.
Maybe, but she could have come and given, you know, Jeremy a freaking check, because I loved when Jeremy went and let Juicy go.
Well, she doesn't watch The Secret Sias.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Well, so when Jeremy went and let Juicy go, I mean, it was the funniest thing in the whole entire world. I was like applauding him. I'm like, oh my God, I love him. Because we were all making complete ninnies of ourselves. Running around after the stupid chicken, and everyone's like, "Oh, I'm like, just let the chicken go. Let the chicken go." I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm a failure at all chickens, because I guess every one of the chickens that were on my watch died.
They all died. Now, Sia had said, "I wanted to come to the finale last season, and I wanted to give Keith Nail money."
Oh,
and he
didn't even
protect any chickens.
Yeah. Well, that would have been very lovely. I guess she didn't like me because I had, you know, I was eating clams, but oh, I didn't know. What did Keith do besides?
I don't know. She just liked him. That was her favorite.
Oh, Well, there you go. I guess I need to make better connections with people. Like, you know, hell, I don't even want $50,000. Just give me $5,000.
$5,000. Yeah, you're.
That's you know what I would do with $5,000 right now? I would buy myself. I would spoil myself so bad. I would go get me a new refrigerator, a new stove, a new microwave, and a new dishwasher.
Wow.
And money left over.
Okay. Well, maybe if Sia listens to the podcast.
There'll be like a Best Buy or Sears truck coming to my house being like, hey, and I don't even care if it's Best stainless or not. Just make it matching.
Okay. Michael Butler O'Rear Jr. has a question. Isn't it a little mean to keep hidden idols in tightly sealed logs and coconuts? How long do you think it took David to crack them open?
Yeah, well, I was sitting there and I was like, when I was watching that, I was like, well, how would you even know, like, in the log, if you were, like, I was, because I was honestly thinking that, like, if I was there and I didn't know about the first, you know, idol being on the inside or whatever, and I see that, you know, symbol on the log, I'd be, like, more inclined to move the log and start digging under it. Like, this is, like, X marks the spot on a treasure map versus how long, like, I was thinking, how long would I make a fool of myself before I realized, well, let me try and crack this open.
Yeah.
You know, I guess they can't be that hard to get into because, I mean, they have to put the idols in there.
Yeah. I think that it's not that tough to get into. I think it's a facsimile, or maybe they glued something back together.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they could have glued it from one end of the stick. Who knows? But I mean, there's definitely some way to get out there.
All right. Derek wants to ask you, is Kimmy disappointed that there's no idol hidden in a giant clam like the one you found in Second Chance? Maybe Monica just didn't want Kimmy to find the clam idol.
I think that's right. Because let me tell you, if there was an idol in the clam, I would have been the one to find it. I mean, I should have known when there were freaking idols were found also, because, you know, I'd go off by myself and it's like no cameras are following me. I'm like, well, they must think that I'm not going to find a damn thing. There must not be anything, but it's after perspective when you're thinking about it. It's like, if there wasn't an idol already found, they'd probably be following me. But, you know, oh, Kimmy, you're going to be going off gathering firewood and whatever for an hour? Okay, goodbye. And nobody's following me.
Yeah.
You know, but if there was an active idol out there, I'm sure somebody would have been like, okay, we got to come with you.
That's what they say. Edward Morris wants to know, who's the Jeff Varner of this season? Is there one? Could there be one?
I mean, like I said, Zeke is kind of, you know, fun with his descriptions and stuff of people, but there's not really somebody that's stirring stuff. You know, Jeff definitely is the straw that likes to stir the drink. Jeff Varner. So he's definitely that kind of person. I don't think that there's that many, you know, that there's somebody out there like that. I mean, you know, definitely I think Zeke has his,
that's a tall order, you know, to be the Jeff Varner of the season.
Yes. Well, because Jeff is really good at distracting. You know what I mean? Distracting and putting things from himself, because he definitely, he even said, you know, he wasn't as strong as he wanted to be, you know, when we were in Cambodia and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you can go and distract and make somebody else seem weaker and, you know, when you're out there. And let's face it, when you're out there for a long time, and you get bored, I'd rather go and wind up Jeff and watch him dance around and entertain me, you know, than some of these other people.
Yeah, that's huge out there.
Hell yeah, it is.
David Baltazar wants to know, Fishback and others have said that you could have won in Cambodia if you got to the end. Who did you want to have sit next to you in the final three?
Well, if you want to definitely clinch a win, you definitely want to bring Spencer and Tasha to the end.
But, back to the puppet talk.
Uh-huh. But I think that any of them, Keith Nail, I mean, I love Keith. Keith is good. When he got to the end, I think that votes would have been split between me and Jeremy. Because Jeremy and I liked each other, but there were a couple times when I was calling him out for being the godfather, you know. But I mean, I think the easy win was definitely Tasha and Spencer, but that wouldn't have been who I would have made it to. Most likely it would have been me and Wentworth and Keith.
And Keith. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is from Dave Hunter. Wants to know, why not try to wrangle a bit more with Keith when he said that it was his time to go to the house? Could you have guilted him into leaving?
At that point, I think that me and Wentworth and Keith knew that. I mean, at this point we were all dead men walking.
Yeah.
I mean, does it really matter which order you step off the plank? Because literally, I mean, it's, you're the next one.
Yeah.
So,
but maybe if he would have left, then maybe that would have made Sia come to the finale. I mean, she would have felt so bad.
Maybe. I mean, that could have been it, but unless that check had my name on it, it really wouldn't have mattered if she showed up with Keith. Now would it? I'm such a dick.
Matt Cowan wants to know, have you been approached, Kimmy, to make a cameo on Mana? Do you know what that is?
No.
That Kelly Wigglesworth, your friend, and Joe Amazing, your other friend.
Thing.
Yes. They're going to make a web series or a TV show, I guess.
Yes.
Have you been asked to be appearing on it?
No, not yet. But I am expecting a goodie in the mail from Kelly. She just asked me for my address, though, and she said she has a present for me.
Oh, is it a sneak peek, or is it like a T-shirt about Mana?
I say nothing. I say nothing.
Okay.
No. No, I really have no idea. But it's funny because, I mean, I love Wiggles, and I love Joe, and there's always so much.
So you'll be watching.
Speculation. Absolutely.
Okay.
I love them. They are good people.
Yes.
They are good, good people. I really enjoy them. You know, when we were at the Hearts of Reality Give Kids the World in Florida, we got to see each other again. And it was just so nice to be able to talk to people and see them in person, not just, you know, on the cell phone and mm-hmm. text message.
Okay. Stefan Van Zandt wants to ask, dear Kimmy, is there anything you want to share about your game in Second Chances that wasn't shown? I've been a huge fan of yours ever since Australia, and I could not have been happier for you and your amazing game in Survivor Second Chance.
Oh, thank you. I just wish that they would have shown a little bit more. I don't know. For me personally, I feel like it was so much of the Spencer show, and I just got very disappointed with a lot of stuff. Like even when we had the loved one visit, they spent more time talking about Spencer and his girlfriend, who didn't even get the loved one visit, than actually seeing the family with their loved ones.
But is that an edit thing, or you just didn't jive with Spencer when you were actually on the island?
No, I mean, Spencer and I would talk, you know, because, you know, at the end, when you're there and you're not going to challenges every day and you're just sitting there, again, when you, as the numbers dwindle down, you only have so many people to talk to. And, you know, Spencer was definitely on the approved talk to person list. And, we would try to talk, you know, but God forbid you talk to somebody who's not in your immediate circle. Then it's like, okay, heads are going to roll. You know, there's things that are about Spencer. I'm not totally anti-Spencer at all. Okay. It's just that when you're out there, and I found it very funny, like in the first, I think it was like the first one or two episodes, Spencer's like, yeah, I've really grown and matured since the last time I've played. And I'm like, you played last week. I mean, what growing did you do? You finished school. You're in the same place. It's not like you got married. It's not like you went and grew up and had kids, or, you know, you were in school, you're out of school. I think now you're old enough to drink. I don't know.
Hey, but Kimmy, proportionally, like a year and a half when you're 22 is like equal to like 3 years when you're 40.
Not really, because you're still doing all the same stupid stuff. I mean, as I get older, thank God I'm not doing the same stupid things, especially since, you know, there weren't video cameras around when I was in my 20s. I did a lot of stupid stuff. Just lucky enough not to get caught, you know.
But there was no social media.
No, but Spencer, it just really annoyed me because it was so, we had such an awesome time with like the loved one visit. We really did. And I don't ever remember any loved one visit where they spent more time with the people who didn't get the reward than actually the people who got the reward. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because they still had Spencer talking and Jeremy talking. And it's like, why don't you show us interacting with our families? Why don't you show, all of us together? It was just bizarre. And like Kelly Wentworth and I had been talking and we were getting closer. And during that challenge where you won the loved one visit, I was her first pick.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, okay. And, but they showed it that I was like her third person that she picked. Like, it was just kind of nonchalant.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, she was like, oh my gosh, this person really needs to come over here. Cause we, you know, XYZ, we've been getting close and, you know, I really want to give this to her. Kimmy, come see your daddy. And I was like, oh my God, thank you. Cause she would have been my first pick at that point.
Yeah.
But they showed, you know, other people getting picked. I think it was, Keith and somebody else first and then me. And mm-hmm. I was like, really? Why? But like, why would you have to change that in editing?
I don't know.
You know what I mean? It's just something that's so stupid and minimal that it was like, really? And then they also didn't show multiple times.
Well, the only thing I could say is that if it was that they were trying to tell the story of that you were with the Jeremy Alliance, then maybe it was like it didn't go necessarily as well with the storyline where that maybe if they're showing her closer with you, it's sort of screwing up the story. That maybe that's it's like an innocent thing.
I don't know. I sure. Let's go with that. yes, that's where I'm going. Okay, that makes sense. Oh my God, Rob, thank you so much for pointing that out.
This is what I do, Kimmy.
Thanks.
All right. This is from Amanda. She wants to know ding, marry, kill, pumpkin spice latte, vanilla latte, black coffee.
I don't drink coffee.
No, and no coffee whatsoever.
No, I don't even own a coffee pot.
Oh my God.
That's not true. I like the smell of coffee, so I'll get coffee ice cream. And then at work, once in a while, one of my friends will make me an iced coffee just because I like, you know, who doesn't like the flavors? But I guess, yeah, I'm like one of those people. If you sent me to go to a Starbucks, and I literally have right in front of me a $25 gift card to Starbucks that I have had December, it'll be 2 years. But because I don't know how to order at Starbucks. I don't know how to order. I don't know what to do. Can I just get tea? Yes. I mean, maybe I should just get a scone. I'm just afraid to walk in there because I'm not cool enough. I don't know the lingo.
Because you're not a millennial.
No, exactly. There's a lot of pressure to walk in there. And I don't know. I've seen, you know, Starbucks on TV. And I don't know. I don't know. Like, I would be in there and be very overwhelmed and perplexed, and I cannot compute. And I'd be next thing you know with a double shot of something, double decaf, and foam.
You can handle it.
Bronze. Yes, and I would probably get something, and they'd be like, mm-hmm.
Look, they sent you off all over Australia by yourself. I think you can handle Starbucks.
I think so too. But I bet they'd take my whole $25 gift card and say I owe them money.
You know, this season, Hannah, she is a barista. She works in a, I'm not sure if it's Starbucks or some coffee store. What did you think of that scene 2 weeks ago? I'd like to get your take on that, where they came back from tribal council and Zeke said, hey, I need a minute. I need to look. Just talk to me later.
Yes. Oh my God. And she just wouldn't stop. And he's like, and she's like, well, but this and this. Go away from my personal space. Yes, that was one of those times I'm going, oh my God, just walk away. What the hell? I mean, it was ridiculous. It's like, listen, walk away. I mean, you're not going to win anything at this point. You're not going to win anybody over. This is complicated. Just go away. Stop. Quit while you're ahead. But wait, I just want to. No. It's like, you got to step away. Step aside. If somebody's telling you to step aside, and that's something you definitely have to learn. I know me, you know what I mean? And it's like in any kind of relationship or something, if I'm telling you I need a minute, don't psychoanalyze me and tell me, you know, what you think I need to do. Step away, because honestly, I'm going to snap. Mm-hmm. And I think that's exactly what was going on with Zeke then. It's like, I know myself a little bit better than you do, pumpkin. Go away.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was definitely one of those things where I'm like, listen, learn a lesson in life. Just walk away. Yeah.
No, pumpkin, no.
Yeah. All right. Alex Kidwell wants to ask you, what's one important aspect of gaining people's trust on Survivor that many players don't think about or take for granted?
I mean, you have to find somebody out there to relate to. You definitely, the thing with the trust is, I mean, I guess it's just the same as real life. If you can find somebody that you trust out there, like I totally trusted Wiggles out there, but it makes you the most vulnerable, and they could always use that against you and throw you under the bus. But your game is going to be a lot better if you have one confidant out there.
Yeah.
It's somebody that you can, you know, have a soundboard against. I mean, like I said, Wiggles and I, we would, we would talk, and I felt such a connection to Wiggles, and I could talk to her, and I felt comfortable, and I trusted her. Like when the day that she got voted off, I mean, my face said it all. I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, what? You're taking away my Wiggles? Like, it was just heartbreaking. So I think if you can trust somebody out there, it just makes it that much easier, because it's a hard game to play by yourself, because it's just a very demanding game of you physically, emotionally, just everything. I mean, it's just a very tough game.
Yeah.
So it's easier if you have somebody that's on your side.
Okay. And then, Kimmy, one more question from the fans. Dominic wants to know, hey, Kimmy, who from this season would you most like to see in a remake of Hollywood Squares?
Oh, that'd be fun. I think it'd be funny. We'd be having Taylor and Figgy together in like one
square.
Yeah, share a square. Let them share a square, because he's like, oh, does it matter? Apparently, she's more easily persuaded than we thought, because you know she last week was showing, no, they can't know that we're together. And meanwhile, she's blowing kisses and everything else. And, you know, obviously.
Yeah, try to ask
she's
the question to them. They're going to be talking about how hot Figgy is.
I guess so. But, you know, they get one answer.
Yeah.
They get an answer. But I also Ken.
Yes.
But yeah. Yeah. I think Ken's good, because Ken just has like such a unique perspective on things. And I think that he's witty and he's, No, but hey, why don't we get Ken to share a square with David?
Oh, I think you're going to say with you. And
stop
I don't mean
that.
Y-O-U. I'm saying the letter U.
You're funny.
Kimmy, do you have a record player? Do you have any vinyl?
I have an 8-track.
Oh.
How about that?
Wow. How about that texture?
I have three. I have the Grease soundtrack, the Styx, and Meatloaf. Those
you have
are my
3 8-tracks.
That's right. That's right. Don't be jealous. Don't be jealous. Do you even know?
You watched any of Australian Survivor as a person who played Survivor in Australia?
No, and people have told me I need to. I just don't know where to.
Yeah. All right. Well, Kimmy, block off some time for that.
Yes. So yes, I will definitely have to.
It's 55 days long.
Oh, wow. How much money did they win?
I think $500,000 Australian.
Okay, well, the Australian dollar is much better now than what it was when I was out there 16 years ago now.
Wow, you are keeping track of the exchange rate of Australian money?
Well, yeah, because when I went, it was, you know, the American dollar was doing really well. Now, not so much. Because I was like, if I ever wanted to go back, how much money could I go and spend?
Yeah, what would you get for your $25 Starbucks card in Australia?
Probably a scone. That's the rate of exchange. 25 American dollars for one scone. Like, let me tell you, those Australian scones. Oh my God, that was worth getting voted out early, because I was sconing it all the time.
You were sconing it.
Oh my God, and they have this little fresh cream and like this strawberry jelly. And you just sat there. I did.
Yeah.
And I would eat these scones. My very own happy place.
Would you rather be sconing it or schmecking down?
Oh, well, you know, if I had somebody nice to go schmecking down with, you know. Listen, my love life and dating life is like me sending texts to myself. Good night, sweetheart. I'm like, oh, thanks, Sugar Bear.
I miss you. Yeah.
My love life sucks.
All right. Kimmy, if the listeners can guess who your Survivor crush is, will you give us some affirmation of that or confirmation that we have it right?
No.
Yes, Pumpkin, yes, you'll reply.
Oh, I'm like, no, it's Pumpkin, no. Like, you know me. I don't kiss them. Tell kind of gal.
But you didn't kiss them, right? This is just a crush.
Yeah, it's just a crush.
You
it's just
put
a
it
crush.
Out there into the universe, Kimmy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I got enough stuff going on in the universe. I don't want to be greedy with my universal demands.
Okay. Do you still tweet at all?
Oh my God. Okay, so I lost my password. It took me forever, and I got back on tweeting. And then I don't have it on my phone. I'm really just not qualified. Like, I was really sitting there and trying and figuring it out. And it's like people, it's like they say, I'm in a tweet. And then I don't understand how to read the tweet. And it's like, It's very confusing to me. I need me a millennial.
Yes. Maybe could we find you a millennial intern that would help you with tweeting?
Yes. I think that's what we need to do.
Okay.
That's what we can do.
All right. So that's if you want to apply.
If you choose to accept this challenge.
Oh, you have a big following, Kimmy.
I do. Yeah. Hey, you remember, do you see the videos that were made? The Gimme Kimmy and the Gays for Kimmy and Gays for
yes.
PG.
Yes. Videos. Well, because PG was here and she showed it to me recently.
Oh, okay. Because I met them over at the Give Kids the World thing in Florida. And I was like, oh my God, I love you guys.
Yes.
And they're like, we love you too. And it was this big, happy, you know, I can't say that I'm a fag hag anymore, but then it's supposed to be a fruit fly.
You should.
But I'm
I don't
not
think
really
anybody true. Should. I don't think we should.
I mean, you know, I have a lot of gay friends, and
yes,
we come over and we come to my house and we fire pit and everything, and I'm just like, I don't know.
You don't know what?
I just like people.
All right, Kimmy. Well, we've taken up too much of your time. Kimmy is on Twitter at Kimmy Kappenberg. If you want to be Kimmy's millennial Twitter assistant, then let me know. I will put you in touch with Kimmy. I'll vet people, Kimmy. I'll send you somebody.
Okay, that'll be great. And I want to make sure that you have a super duper happy birthday.
Thank you so much, Kimmy. I appreciate that.
Awesome time with your family. And we need to start a new Kimmy campaign to get my happy ass back onto Survivor.
All right, good.
I got things to prove. I know how to do it now. Okay. Took me a little while. I've already done myself as I've been a millennial. I've been a Gen Xer. I don't want to be a geriatric. Okay. I need to get there before I'm too old.
Right. All right. So what's the hashtag for this podcast? Is it sconing it? Is it schmecking down? Is it yes, pumpkin? Yes.
Oh my God. I don't know. You're going to, oh, son of a bitch. I don't know. I'm really not qualified.
Yes.
Well, sconing it's cute.
Sconing it. Okay. Let's go with sconing. I like yes, pumpkin, yes also. We could do both.
Well, but you know what though? But yes, pumpkin, yeah. People would understand that. Sconing it, people wouldn't even know what the hell a scone is.
Yeah.
So we're going, yes, pumpkin, yes.
Yes, pumpkin, yes. And Kimmy, I'm sorry I put you on the spot about who your Survivor crush is. I know when that happens to me, I just clam up. So I'm sorry I put you on the spot there.
Well, and you know me, I'm good at catching clams.
Yeah.
But oh no, it's okay. You can bust balls all you want.
Okay.
You have several seasons and it's yeah. You know. I'll just sit here in my own little happy place.
All right, Kimmy. Thank you so much. Okay, all the best.
All right, sweetie. We'll talk to you later.
All right, take care. Bye.
Bye.
All right, everybody. There you have it. Kimmy Kappenberg here on the podcast. Very fun to check in with the island spouse of my know-it-all spouse, Kimmy Kappenberg, here on the podcast. All right, so that's going to do it for us here today. Next podcast you're going to hear is the voicemail podcast with Allie Lasher. Going to dig into some of your voicemails as we get set for that again on this very busy Thursday. Of course, thanks goes out to all of the patrons of the podcast who keep me very busy podcasting all of this stuff. So thanks again to all of you. If you want to find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron of Rob is a Podcast, you can visit us on the website, robisawebsite.com/patron. Had a very fun patron cast. My brother was here this past week, and so we got into some very fun stuff with Danny Sesternino on the Patron 5 for 5 this past Monday night. If you want to find out more about all of that, robisawebsite.com/patron. Have a good one, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye.